Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. I'm super excited for today's episode. I have a really cool guest. You might have caught a glimpse of him there. I'm going to bring him back on in a second. I think he's probably the perfect guest for the show. It's a really, really neat story. I'm super excited to talk with him about it, pick his brain about it. And for those of you looking to build an app, kind of maybe never broke through that level of reaching success with something, or even just kind of in the tech world in general. We've talked to a couple people on this show before who have kind of been in the startup phase of this. That's not this today. We're talking about somebody who's actually built something from scratch, built it up to a multi-million dollar business. I mean, this is legit. This is really, really cool. But before I get into that, just please be sure to, if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe. If you're listening to this on Spotify, wherever you're listening to the show, please subscribe, leave a 5-star rating. That really, really helps the show grow and reach more people. So that being said, I'm going to bring on Mr. Brian Clayton, who is the CEO of GreenPal, which is a platform that connects homeowners with local lawn care professionals, and actually snow removal professionals as well, as I found out. And they have scaled this business to over 300,000 customers and 30 million annual revenue, largely through the use of their mobile app, which is really, really amazing. So I can't wait to hear more about it. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, Dan, thanks for having me on. That was a great introduction. It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Super excited to talk about this. So give us a little bit more of a, 30,000 foot view of GreenPal, what it is, kind of where you got the idea, all that stuff.
Yeah. So like you mentioned earlier, GreenPal is an online marketplace that works kind of like Uber or Instacart or DoorDash or any of these apps that we have come to rely on to get stuff done. It works like that for lawn care services, for yard maintenance, and as you mentioned, snow removal now. So if you're a homeowner or you rent a house and you need to get this chore done, you know, normally you'd have to call around on Facebook or Yelp or Craigslist or a Google search, or, you know, you throw a rock at the guy down the road who's mowing the neighbor's yard or something. You know, it's like, it's very manual. And with GreenPal, you just download the app, you pop your address in, and you'll get multiple quotes back in a minute, and you hire the service you want to work with through the app. And then you schedule and pay them through the app. And if that goes well, you just push a button and it just happens like clockwork in the background. And then as a service provider, it's one platform to run your entire business. So you don't have to pass out flyers anymore. You don't have to like beat your head against the wall trying to figure out how to pop up a Facebook ad campaign or something. You just go to GreenPal, you get all the lawns you want, and you have it all in one place. All your schedule, all of your routing, all of your billing is all in one place. It's kind of like a business in your pocket. So we set out to solve the problems on both the consumer and the service provider side.
Very cool. Very cool. Very interesting. And we were talking about this before we hit record. So I'm kind of, just for you guys to know, I'm kind of in the process of launching my own marketplace. I've never really done a marketplace type of deal. So I'm kind of like asking questions like kind of like this. So before I get into the background of this, I have a question. When you mentioned from the consumer side, you have these people who will just Google, use Yelp, use Facebook, use those type of things. How do you actually combat that? How do you manage to say, hey, no, actually join our platform instead of going that route? Because I feel like there's still a lot of people who, I need this thing. Google also will have, when you type in lawn something, it'll fill in the rest of like lawn care near me. You know what I mean? So totally. How do you rise above that?
Well, that's a great question. Because there's a saying that first time founders worry about product. They worry about what's the app going to look like? What's the marketplace going to look like? How am I going to design it? What are the workflows look like? What are the rules of the marketplace? Like the first time founder worries about all of that stuff. And the second, I did it too. The second time founder worries about distribution. All he or she cares about is the only thing that matters is, can we get people to try this thing? And how are we going to get people to use it? And how are we going to get people to discover it? And how are we going to get people to know about it when they need it? And really all of that other stuff is important and hard and needs to be solved. None of that even matters until we can figure out how to drive traffic to the property, to the app, to the website. And so it's important to even start with that question. How do you deal with the million other ways people are solving this problem? And for us, it's and that's one reason why every marketplace is different, because the answer to that question is different. Like, if you're trying to start a service marketplace for auto mechanics, or one for home painters, or one for maids, or one for lawn care services, that strategy on how you're going to get people to your platform is going to be a little different. And that's why all of these are hard in their own way. For us, the way we deal with it is first off, we have a product that's just 10 times better than doing it the old way. So as you mentioned, you can go to Angie's List, Home Advisor, Thumbtack, Craigslist, Yelp, Facebook, Nextdoor, and you can get 100 names and phone numbers of lawn care services nearby you or snow plowing services nearby you. And you can get a bunch of information really easily, but you still have to manually poll these people. You still got to call them. You still have to figure out, okay, what is their availability? What is the price going to be? Are they any good? Are they going to show up? I don't know. And you still have to manually go through that process, and you got to manually figure out how to pay them. Okay, what's their Venmo, or I leave a check under the mat? Some guys still want cash. And so it's still very much of a clunky process. So the discovery piece of it's kind of easy, but everything else is a pain in the butt. So we set out to solve everything else. So you go from, okay, I don't know anybody, to, okay, here's their pricing, here's their availability. They want to do my project for me, and this is the price they're going to do it for. Here's all the reviews I can read about them. Here's how often they show up on time. Here's how often people are booking them for a second and third visit, so I know that they kind of are pleasing their customers. And so now I have all this rich data. I can make an informed hiring decision. And then when I hire them, they actually will show up. The case of the disappearing lawn guy, you know, where you hire somebody and they flake or ghost on you, is like, it happens half the time. And so this, our app solves that problem. And then if it goes well, you can set it up for the whole season. You don't have to worry about it. So it's the only way in the world you can go from, I don't have anybody, my grass is 3 feet tall, to they mowed it on Thursday, they did a good job, and it was cleanly billed, and now they're doing it every other week. And so it's the only way to get that done. So that's the first thing. You have to have a solution that is just 10 times better than doing it the old way. And think about how much better an Uber is than calling, 1-800-TAXI or whatever. Think about how much better Instacart is versus, you said you live in Pittsburgh, getting in your car in the snow and schlepping down to Publix or Kroger and getting out, and it's cold and you got to like go do all your grocery shopping and then haul all the groceries back. Like, Instacart is so much better than that. And so you have to have a product that's so much better, not just a little better, like 100 times better. And so that starts there. Okay. And then the next thing is, okay, you would think that would be enough, but it's not. You still have to figure out how to get people to discover it and know about it. And the reality is most founders want to be good at every channel there is. They want to like dabble a little bit in Facebook, dabble a little bit on Instagram. Maybe I'm going to throw up a TikTok account. I'm going to do some podcast advertising. I'm going to do some Google AdWords. And it's like, they're not good at any of this stuff. The reality is you're going to bet your little company on one channel. You're going to become really good at one channel. You're going to be the best marketer on Instagram and really just be crickets everywhere else for the first few years, because you have to innovate on product, but you also have to innovate on marketing and distribution. And so you have to focus a lot of your intensity and firepower on beating the competition in one channel. And so for us, it's Google organic search. So lawn care services nearby me in Pittsburgh, we should pop up as one of the first three options that you can check out as a consumer. You know, like, that's how we get 70% of the people that find out about GreenPal.
Wow. Okay. That's some gold stuff right there. I love what you said about kind of, you know, the shotgun approach of trying to do that, but innovating on product, but innovating in marketing as well too. So
that's right. Okay. Yeah.
So we got ahead of our, I knew that question would kind of lead us to get ahead of where I wanted to go, but take me back to the beginning, take me back to the humble origins of GreenPal. I think you said you had a background in landscaping as well. So how did you even land on this idea?
So it's a great question. My first company was a landscaping business. I started mowing grass in high school as a way to make extra cash. And then when I graduated high school, I was like, well, I don't really want to like take on a bunch of student loans, and so I can mow grass and pay my way through college. Did that, went to school at night and mowed yards all day long. And I was going through business school and I was learning all this stuff to like in business school. And I was like, this is not actually how you run a small business. It's crazy. And so it was kind of this weird jarring thing of running a little small business while being in business school. And so went through that and graduated business school. And I thought, well, I guess I'm going to hang up the grass cutting thing and go into the job market like all of my friends. And then I started doing some quick, like back of the envelope math. And I was like, I'm going to take a pay cut. I'm making more money mowing yards. I had like two employees at the time. And I thought I should just stick with this business and see how far I can take it. And I thought, I don't really want to be a lawn guy my whole life. This is not why I went to business school. But I thought, okay, no, grass cutting is not the thing. The service business is the thing. And building a sales process is the thing. And grass, kind of like McDonald's, burgers is not the business they're in. They're in the real estate business. And for me, like grass was not the business I was in. I could be in the sales business. And I could build a big company in this little industry. And so I made a little business plan with what I learned in business school and over a 15-year period of time, ended up building that into a real company, around 150 employees, $10 Wow. million a year in sales at one of the bigger landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee where I live. And then in 2013, it was acquired by a big national company. You wouldn't think that there's big landscaping companies that are nationwide that have thousands of employees, but there are. There's like three. Mm-hmm. And one of them bought the business. And after that, I took some time off and figured out, okay, well, what do I want to do with my life? I was still a young man. I was only like 32 years old. And I thought, what do I want to do with my life? And I thought, well, I'm fairly confident somebody's going to build a marketplace to make this whole industry run smooth because I knew how clunky it ran. I knew how inefficient it ran. And I knew how difficult it was for vendors to make a living in the business and for consumers to hire them. And I felt confident somebody was going to build it. And I thought, well, why couldn't that be me? And it was very much like naivete as an asset. I didn't know how hard any of this was going to be. But I thought it looked easy in the social network. Well, why can't I do that? You know? And so I was kind of seduced into the idea that I could build the Airbnb for lawn mowing or the Uber for lawn mowing because those two apps were gaining a lot of popularity at the time. In fact, I was very much inspired by both of those founders, by Travis Kalanick and Brian Chesky. And so recruited two friends to start the business with me. And we started, the first thing we did is we made a prototype. And then we didn't know how to code. We didn't know how to build software. So we paid a development shop to build what we thought this app should be. That was a total failure. That took like 9 months and 150 grand of our cash. And then we thought, well, if we're going to be in the tech
business. I'm familiar, everyone.
So. Yeah.
I've talked about this like many times on the show. Anyway, continue.
Man, painful. I still got a lot of PTSD from that. And so it was a gut check. And we came to the realization that if we were going to try to be in the tech business, we were going to have to reinvent ourselves as entrepreneurs, as founders, as people, really. None of us were engineers, but we went to dev boot camp and took every online class we could on how to code and write software. And over the next year, rebuilt the whole app while teaching ourselves the basics on building software. That was the foundation for getting our first 50 customers, first 100 customers, first 500 customers, 1,000 customers, 10,000 customers. And now today around 300,000 people using it.
Wow. Well, I mean, just as that closing piece right there, you guys heard what he just said, a year. And then before that, 150K sunk into that, right?
Yeah, total waste.
And so what's interesting with the new one that I'm launching, I'm specifically inside of the no code, low code space. That's like where we've learned to specialize, right? Like where I actually started doing that. And so the whole idea of the new marketplace that I'm launching is going to be based in the no code space. I built it in about a month. And it's all getting ready to go up and anything like that. So, but it's not coded. It's not specifically coded. It's just like, basically it's a pretty good looking one, but it's MVP style. But anyway, we'll talk more about that later, but that's really, really cool. So I love how you said like, man, somebody's going to build this. And I saw the idea and then you just went out and did it. So that's really cool. So walk me through this then, because this is interesting when it comes to a marketplace, because there's two sides of it. Right. So you have the service providers, the people who are actually listed that can come up and mow your lawn, be listed on there as service providers, et cetera. And you have the consumer side. So What kind of things did you do once you had this product rebuilt? You kind of had a new thing. What did you do to get your first customers, your first, you know, small batch of customers and such?
Yeah, these are really good questions. So in a marketplace, you have two customers. You've got two value propositions. You have two offerings. And if that's not hard enough, a lot of times they're at odds with each other. And so you're having to strike a balance between the wants and needs of either side of the transaction to figure out a fair way to conduct business that's better for both sides. You know, every person that wants to take an Uber to the airport, you know, would love for the car to just show up and sit in the driveway for 15 minutes while I get ready. And I want you to take me to the airport for $10. Well, that's not necessarily what the driver wants. The driver wants your ass to be out there and ready to go because they got to make money and they want to make a premium for that because they need to be there at a certain time and they got to go through traffic and stuff. So it's like that's how every marketplace is. What the buyers want and what the sellers want are going to be at odds with each other. And so you have to figure out just through trial and error what is the right balance? What makes sense? What's fair? Because if you over index to one side or the other, you're going to piss off the other side. And then you get abandonment and then you get what's called negative network effects. So every marketplace has network effects. And that's what makes them durable. That's what makes them valuable. Uber, for example, the more drivers, the less wait time, the less of the wait time, the more consumers, more drivers, less fare, the cheaper the fare, the more consumers. So it's this reinforcing flywheel. Our marketplace is exactly the same. The more vendors that use it, the cheaper the prices that people pay, the cheaper the prices, the more consumers that come on, the more vendors that want to use it and so on, and the more saturation that you get in a network. And so that makes the flywheel run smoother. Well, that flywheel can also, that creates a network effect, but that flywheel can also run in reverse. And when it runs in reverse, you get negative network effects. Hmm. And the thing about that's different with a marketplace and like a traditional SaaS business, you know, like a SaaS business, you know, you've got customers, you've got a customer base, you're billing them every month and you know, they're happy or maybe they're not happy. And you'll start to see leading indicators, whether people are pissed off or not. And you can make changes and fix things. And a traditional business is the same way. But a marketplace, if you make a couple really bad decisions or not even really bad, a couple of just not popular decisions, you can create these negative network effects really quick and it can spiral. And it can dry up very quickly, and your whole business can get eviscerated in a matter of months. And that's happening right now. It's happening to Lyft. I mean, just look at Lyft stock price. They have negative network effects that are taking place. And so that's what makes marketplaces challenging, makes them hard, makes them uncertain. And it really is just one big experiment where you're trying things. And you're looking at the impact and you're trying to figure out, was that a good move or not? And then you're reversing course or you're improving course or whatever. And that's one of the things that I've been spending a decade beating my head against the wall. Took us a year to build a product. We spent two years just in Nashville, Tennessee, going through the motions of figuring out how to architect the marketplace with hundreds of customers, not thousands. Because if 100 people use the app in any given week, 80 of them were pissed off. And I knew there was no reason to launch a new city until we could at least flip that to where we could make 80 people happy and only 20 pissed off. Now it's 99 are happy or 98 are happy and 2 are pissed off. And we're trying to figure out how to make it 99. And so we're still solving a lot of the same problems, just figuring out how to make it better and better. So as a marketplace founder, you're always going to be battling that. You're always going to be trying to figure that out.
That's interesting. I never heard of that. So that thank you for the warning, because I can see that makes perfect sense. Well, so I had another question, but that spurred another thing. So like, what kind of decisions? I haven't followed the Lyft story. I had no idea what was going on with that. But what kind of decisions would be like that? Is it a design thing? Is it a functionality thing?
Everything.
Could it be like a political thing, like anything like that at all?
So for us, well, okay. So just some famous ones. Lyft, Uber with surge pricing. Surge pricing is a really good lesson for marketplace founders. That, you know, surge pricing makes total rational economic sense.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's like, hey, there ain't enough drivers out here. You want to ride in the snow on New Year's Eve. We got to implement surge pricing. You're going to have to pay a little more, but that's the spot price on what that ride is worth. Mm-hmm. Come on, everybody. Well, they introduced that and pissed off everybody and you know, got the hashtag delete Uber and tech journalists were roasting them for that, how it was usurious and heavy-handed and taking advantage of people when they needed a ride the most. And so it's like, that's an example. As a marketplace founder, you're in a rock and a between a rock and a hard place. You know, I'm trying to get you a ride. I've introduced this interesting marketplace mechanic to get the fair price for the ride because there's a human being driving you, but people just didn't get it. And so, you know, they don't have surge pricing anymore. And so as a founder, study what happened with surge pricing and learn from that. And so for us, we have the same issues. You know, a consumer wants to be able to come onto our platform and say, yeah, Mobit Thursday, Thursday afternoon be great. And then after you get done, I'll let you know when I want it again. Maybe I want it in 2 weeks. Maybe I want it in a month. Maybe I want it in 3 weeks. I don't know, but I'll let you know the day before. It doesn't work that way,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
It doesn't work that way. The world does not work that way. Yeah. You can get a service out there on Thursday, but if you like how it went, you need to fall into a weekly, every 7 day or every two week schedule on a cadence, so we know when you want it. We can schedule it. We can put it on a route, because that's the only way vendors make money in this business. They're not riding around with a truck and trailer with lawnmowers on there, like, oh, I hope somebody you know, buzzes me to come mow their yard. That's not how the world works. And so that's an example of
okay.
an unpopular decision we had to make. You know, to make the whole marketplace work. And so you're always working through problems like that as a founder, you know, okay. in a marketplace.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that helps. That helps me understand. Okay, so I'm kind of in this space too. And for anyone out there maybe trying to start a marketplace, you know, I've found myself, I kind of went a little bit in reverse. I've kind of found with, I built the product based off of ideas and other things that I'd seen out there. I've started to get feedback on my tool of like, okay, this is something that people will pay for and actually use. So it's like, okay, I got some validation. So now, you know, for me, for anyone else starting a marketplace out there, is it more important to, at least this is the story I tell myself, like, okay, before I go out there and get consumer clients using the platform, I need to actually have vendors. I need to have like, you know, like, did you have to get lawn mowing companies on there before you pushed consumers to it? Is that kind of the process? Or can you do both of those at the same time when you're starting out, I'm saying?
No, you don't want to do both at the same time because it's impossible. You know, Uber started out just as black cars. And so, and literally right. they were in San Francisco and they had 5 limousines that they paid by the hour. And that was the supply. And then they went out and tried to figure out how to get consumers. And so they didn't worry about supply for, I don't know, probably 3-6 months. If they had tried to do both, they never would have figured it out. And so
most
marketplaces are going to be constrained by the side spending money, by the side that's paying for the service. The side that's making money most of the time is the easier one to get on. So, most of the time it makes sense to kind of hand crank the fulfillment and then go after the demand side, the buyer side, figure out how you're going to market to them. And even like self fulfill, the fulfillment, this happened with Instacart. The founders went out in the early days and Instacart just went public, by the way, for $10 billion. Yeah. The founders of that business went to, I don't know what grocery stores are in San Francisco. Let's call it Publix. They went to Publix and they bought one of every single item in the store and brought it back to a 600 square foot apartment that they all shared, the three of them. and they took pictures of every single item in the store and put it on a website. And then as orders came in, they would go and buy all of that stuff and then deliver it like themselves to the consumer.
Wow.
They didn't worry about, oh, we got to build this network of shoppers and we got to like convince Kroger to come on and figure out how to get all their inventory. No, they hand cranked all of that. Wow. And then figured out how to do the consumer side. So
I never heard that story. That's really awesome.
So there's a good book called The Cold Start Problem by a guy named Andrew Chen, where he talks about a lot of these stories about how marketplace founders got over the cold start. And I don't know if that one's in that book, but that is a story of the cold start problem. Airbnb did it. They rented out their own spare bedroom first.
Yeah.
So you're going to be self-fulfilling the demand side, you know, you're going to be doing the product and like hand cranking that and then figuring out how to automate and market to the demand side.
Yeah. And just to share with you, with the audience here, how I'm starting up mine too, as of right now, I've been doing this for the past couple of weeks, I came from a little bit of a sales background, and, you know, one of my skills that I developed was being able to cold call people. So that's what I've actually been doing, is going on directories, different ones that exist out there, and literally picking up the phone and calling people and being like, hey, look, building this new marketplace, would you be possibly interested? I mean, I've gotten one person that said no out of the entire list of people I called. Like, the success rate is crazy high because they're just like, that's actually a really cool idea, and this sounds like a huge value add for my business. Right.
That's a good signal.
A little bit. Yeah. That's a good signal. So before I worried, because I started thinking like, man, if I could get like an ad going, or like, how am I going to get like a funnel, like get people signed up? And I'm like, I got a stupid phone. Why don't I just call people and just see? That's free. You know what I mean?
Could be a signal that the fulfillment piece of it is going to not be easy, but to be straightforward.
Right.
And that the hard part is, okay, now I've got, you know, two suppliers, three suppliers. I don't need 20 because all I need is three to get started.
Yeah.
Now let me go see if I can get 10, 20, 100 people interested to transact. Right. Because if I can't get that, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, that was the other piece I forgot to mention too, was I offered to say like, hey, I'll set up your profile for you.
Yeah.
I'll do it for you.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that's great. And it takes me 5 minutes to do. It does not take me that long.
You'll have to do that in early days. So, yeah. You'll have to do that.
Awesome. I'm excited, man. It's going to be fun. So let me ask you this. What's, drawing back on your experience of running this, if you could forewarn people of possibly one of the biggest landmines they might hit or step on when it comes to running a marketplace, not only in the startup phase, but as they grow, as they scale, as they do whatever. What advice would you give to say like, hey, look out for that. That could be a problem for you.
Yeah. Well, let's just keep it like day one, the first 10 customers, 100 customers. The problem I see every founder make, including myself, is they want to do everything other than just get 10 damn transactions done on the network. And they want to do let me go do the social media strategy. Let me go get some more suppliers when I don't have any customers, or let me go get some more customers when I don't have any suppliers, or whatever. And all that matters is transactions, or like, let me go code some stuff. Let me go build some more interfaces. Let me go build some more screens, because I need some more screens. I need some more bells and whistles and tools. That's what I'm missing. And it's like, they want to go do all that. And I've been guilty of this. I'll tell you a quick story. I'll tell you a quick story. And this illustrates it. I do coaching as a hobby for a couple of founders. I usually keep it around three or four. and there's this one guy, young kid, probably 26, 27, that's always coming up with new ideas. And I'm always trying to help him think through it. And about a year ago, he comes to me, he goes, hey, I got this great idea, and I'm going to build a marketplace for it. I'm like, okay, cool. What is it? He goes, well, you know how I just built a house. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, well, dude, I saved so much money on the last part of building the house because I found these supply yards. They have all this weird stuff in the back that they can't sell. And so I got a $10,000 front door for $300. I got a $5,000 window for $400. And I got this like really expensive tile flooring that I was able to do the powder room in for free. And I got all this like stuff. And it was just sitting there in the back of these supply yards because it was special order stuff. And they can't put it out front. They don't have any SKUs for it, and they can't sell it. And so, dude, I saved all this money, and they got all this stuff just sitting there. And he said, I think a marketplace should exist where you should be able to point and click and buy this stuff for half off. The supply yards want to get rid of it. Consumers will want to buy it. You should be able to ship it because it's so cheap. And I said, man, that sounds like a great idea. He goes, yeah, dude, I'm coding up the inventory system right now. I've got the front ordering kind of solution done on Shopify, you know, as a proof of concept. And I'm going to start working on this, and I'm going to start working on that, and then I'm going to launch next month. It's going to be awesome. And I'm like, hold up. I said, before we build all that stuff and spend the next, like, months coding all this stuff up, just do me one favor. And he's like, what's that? I said, man, what's the name of the one supply house? He's like, oh, it was 84 Lumber. I was like, yeah, okay. So you know the manager of the store? He's like, yeah. I said, dude, go just tell them this. I was like, I just want to sit in the back for a week, and I will sell all of this crap you've got, and all I want is 10% of the proceeds, and you guys can have the rest. He goes, dude, I don't want to do that. That's going to be a waste of my time. I said, just hear me out. I said, just do that, and then come back to me and talk to me in a week. And I said, sell that crap by any means necessary. Offer up Facebook groups, Craigslist, get it gone or whatever, let it go or whatever, mm-hmm. all these apps. Get rid of that stuff. He's like, man, I don't want to do that. I got to build these screens. And I'm like, just do it. He's like, okay. So he begrudgingly does it. I said, if you want any more advice from me, you will go do this. And he said, okay. He begrudgingly goes and does it. By day two, he calls me. He goes, there's no business here.
Wow.
He goes, there's no business here. And I was like, dude, hold on. Let's give it a week. He goes, no, there is no business here.
It's a great story.
There is no business here. And I was like, what's going on, man? He's like, dude, this is so freaking hard. He goes, man, nothing matches anything. People want it like this. The suppliers want it like that. They can't agree on price. It's all like, there's a reason why this crap sits in the back and rots. It's unsellable. There's no business here. And I said, okay, well, at least you didn't waste a year building a bunch of shit nobody wanted to use. So take that lesson and apply it to your journey as you go from no customers to 100. How do I not make that mistake?
That's such a good story. And that actually makes me feel a lot better. Cause that's kind of what I did was, you know, that's how I am. I noticed myself like, oh, I'll just go and build this thing, or I'll go through the app and I'll be like, oh, this would actually work better. And this design's a little bit better. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's a total waste of time because, you know, there's, you know, especially because I do that for a living and that's what I do, but it's a waste of time in the beginning when you, like you said, you should be focusing on getting clients. So I kind of went backwards at it, but I'm glad now that I'm getting some validation. So it's like, okay, at least I didn't waste that time. It seems like, so it should be, it still might be a hard path to it, but
totally these marketplaces are hard, and that's just part of it. And that's just part of it, man. Wow. Like it really is the battle you have to go through. And a lot of this stuff can seem like spinning your wheels, but it's just what you have to do.
Yeah. Hey, quick. Did you guys ever raise any funding for GreenPal?
We did not. We thought about it in the early days, and you know, I think it was like my personal animus towards like groveling for checks. I had just sold an 8-figure business. I didn't want to like waste 6 months going around, hey, will you write me a check for $15,000 for this stupid idea I have? Like, I didn't want to do that. And so it was like, I had no desire to do that. And also being from Nashville, it's not like we have a lot of venture capital sloshing around here. Right. And so it would have been a long grind, and I didn't have to. It's not like I threw a bunch of my own money at this. We just bootstrapped the business from day one and kept it real lean, but we didn't take a paycheck for like 3 years. And so it was hard in the early days.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I mean, you hear a lot about that too. Like there's all these, I see a lot of people, and I encourage people when they come to me and asking about that, to really think about. That was, I went down that path. My very first app, it wasn't even a marketplace. It was just a health and fitness app. And kind of was told like, hey, you could raise money for this and all this stuff. Found out that it was pretty tough to do. And I didn't really, even after I did a little bit of outreach, I was like, I don't really know if I want to do this. Like you said, it felt groveling. It felt like, it just felt like this is my thing. I don't want to have other people's hands in it just because they're giving me money for it. And at the time I didn't really have a solid monetization path for it at the time. So I decided not to do it. I never even raised any money for it. But then there's all kinds of people out there that I see that are, I think, especially in the world of SaaS. So I've built a lot of SaaS applications, and I'm talking to you now. I can really see the difference in that. Like you said, like a SaaS customer is like, hey, you have this service, subscribe to it, in a monthly or annual plan, and then you get these cool things that you can do.
That's right.
Great. Pretty straightforward. Awesome. Pretty straightforward. A marketplace is so many different moving pieces, it seems like. Even though there's two, there's, again, like you said, there's just multiple different things, and it's just a whole different dynamic to stuff. So it's been really eye-opening. So now as you've grown, you've brought on a team and you manage that, and you clearly come on podcasts and talk about different things and do whatever. So like, how do you balance all that? How do you make sure that you're still improving the product? Cause you said you got to have a 10 times better product, right? Like how do you continue to improve the product, but also be present on social, continue growth, manage customer satisfaction, manage data analytics, all that stuff. I'm sure there's just 9 million things to do.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you focus your firepower on, and how do you stay on top of it? All these spinning plates. One thing is you build a good team, and in the early days you're doing all this stuff yourself, and as time goes on, there's a great book called The E Myth by Michael Gerber, a real basic book about small business, but it still applies to big business. And one of the things that they talk about in The E Myth is the concept of an org chart. And in the early days, you got this org chart, and you got the CEO, founder, and then you got head of marketing, head of product development, head of customer service, head of R&D, and then you got social media marketer, and then you got blog content writer, and then you got all these tasks, and then you got, SEO lead, and you got, backlink builder, and all these things. There's a million things, and it's like your name is on every single one of those roles. So it's just one org chart of you. And then as time goes on, you start making a little bit of money, you can then identify, okay, I'm doing 100 things. I suck at all of them, but I'm like 80-20 good at all of them. I'm going to start peeling my name off of these things one at a time. Either I'm going to get a freelancer or a contractor or a consultant or an employee or to come and help me with these individual roles. I'm going to start delegating them, not because I don't know how to do it, I'm already doing it, but because I need for them to focus on it and execute my plan with more bandwidth than I can do by myself. And so it's not like you're delegating from a standpoint of, oh, go handle it, I don't know how to do that, because that always blows up in your face. You're delegating from a standpoint of, hey, I'm doing this thing on Sunday afternoons for 1 hour a week. I need you to do it 10 hours a week. And here's what I want you to do. And here is the best plan that I can come up with, because I've been doing it in my spare time, and I want you to like kick ass at it, and I want you to focus on it, and here's what I expect you to do, and here's what success looks like, because I can only like move it this far, but if you give it 10 or 20 or 30 hours a week, I think you can get it here. And then we're going to talk about it every Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And if you do that over and over and over again, you start peeling your name off of some of these roles, you then build a machine around you, and then you've got a business, and it takes a long time, and you're going to get it wrong more times than not. I know I have, but that's how we keep up with everything now. That's how I went from just me and two guys to now we're 43 people. And slowly peeling my name off of roles off that org chart.
That's gotta feel good. That's gotta feel good when you can do that.
Took 10 years. So the first 5 years were really, really hard. But you've got to have faith. Keep going.
Interesting, man. Well, tell you what, let's look at this. Actually, I wanted to pull this up. So this is GreenPal. This was a screen that I actually got to when I was signing up this morning. I was
awesome. Fantastic.
So yeah, this is pretty neat. So you said,
you can use this for snow plowing and lawn mowing. And you can toggle back and forth. And so now you've got contractors nearby you looking at your yard, and you'll get an email and a text as they look at it and say, okay, yeah, I'll do it for $45 or I'll clear your driveway for $100.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys got the app and everything. So, yeah. So, I mean, we haven't even really talked all that much about that, to be honest. I mean, but, you know, let's talk about that. Like, when did you actually start the app after, like, did you do the website, the web version first and then go onto a mobile app, or did you go the other way around?
We did the web version first because that's what we were learning how to code. Okay. I was learning basic HTML, CSS, and JavaScript and React. And my co-founder is learning basic Ruby on Rails backend programming. And so we rebuilt and launched the entire web platform. And you know, this was 2014, 15, 16. So maybe we were able to get away with just a web version then. But we had only a web version for a long time. And then after we had a team of two or three web developers, I think it was actually four web developers, we then brought on a what's called a cross-platform mobile app developer. So one app that works in Android and iOS. And that was the concession. We couldn't afford a dedicated Android developer and a dedicated iOS developer. And so we did that. And then we eased our way into a full mobile app team. And it took a while. It took a long time, and we went probably 3 years without a mobile app. Ideally, you don't do that. Ideally, you get the web up and going, and then a mobile app right behind it. Because you know these days, you know, you look at our analytics, 90% of the traffic is on mobile devices.
Wow.
Yeah, 90%. Wow. It's almost like desktop doesn't matter. So it's like
that's
it's
crazy.
There's a Zuckerberg quote from 2011 where he said, you know, if you guys bring me any mock-ups or designs or concepts on desktop, I will leave the meeting. And if you do it twice, you're fired. And he had to do that a couple times. And it's like, that's how important it was back then. That's how they understood that mobile was everything. And so now fast forward a decade later, it's even more so. It's almost like desktop doesn't matter.
Wow. That's really, really interesting. That's crazy. So, wow. Really, really cool. Okay. I try to pepper this question in with everyone too, since it's the big topic of 2023. What do you see as far as the world of AI? And are you guys looking into any, I mean, you don't have to disclose any like, you know, trade secrets or anything like that, but are you guys looking into AI? Is it something that you've paid attention to or thought about incorporating into the platform at all, or even in any other part of your business?
Yeah, it's kind of like we just talked about mobile, and back in 2010, 11, 12, 13, you could say, oh, we're a mobile first startup and, you know, we're mobile. And it's like nowadays it's like, no, duh. Like that's just part of it. And so I think AI is going to like follow that. AI is like, you can say, oh no, we're an AI driven tool that helps you keep track of your calendar better. And it's like,
that's the new sexy term. Yeah.
And you can say that now. I think in 2 or 3 years, maybe less, it's going to be like saying, oh, we're a mobile first startup. You know, it's going to be the same thing. And it's going to be like, yeah, of course you're using AI. That's just like table stakes. And so I think every startup needs to be thinking about this. Hmm. If you're a marketplace like us, where you're facilitating real world transactions, I think you're a little less susceptible to being eviscerated by AI, because it's like, you know, how much AI is it really going to take to motivate a guy to get out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning to show up and mow a yard? It's like AI can't replace that. Now AI can organize that better, more seamlessly and more efficiently, but it can't really replace that. And so for us, it's not like we're susceptible to being like wiped out by AI, and so that's what makes a marketplace more durable, makes it have a better moat around itself because real world things are happening. Whereas if you have a traditional straightforward SaaS business, this is a tool that helps correct your grammar writing mistakes, you're fucked. Like AI is going to wipe out your business. Like wow. It's like yeah. You are screwed. Whatever you spent your whole life building is going to be gone in 3 months. We are a tool that helps you, I don't know, helps you track your sales funnel better. And you know, no, you're gone. You're like Salesforce has got 1,000 engineers working on AI that's make you know, you're gone. And so it's, AI is going to wipe out a lot of real straightforward tools that people were using because it's just going to simply automate it away and literally make it magical. And so I think we're going to go back to an age of real stuff matters, real company stuff matters, real world things matter, and not necessarily bells and whistles because AI is going to wipe all that out.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember reading a lot and kind of looking into this type of stuff, and I think that was originally everyone was saying like, oh man, like all these truck drivers and all these people who are blue collar type workers, right, are going to be put out of business first by AI, and it's exactly the opposite.
It's
for like people like people like me, software developers, people in the design space, people like on Fiverr. Yep. You know, it's so easy to replace those things now.
Yep.
And it's almost like those people, you have to become a master of using AI in order to not be replaced.
The plumber is going to, I guarantee in 5 years, plumbers will be making more than lawyers.
Whoa, you heard it here first, folks. That is a bold claim. That's crazy.
Watch it happen.
Wow. I mean, I'll say we had some issues with our natural gas. We just got a new house this summer. We moved.
The guy that you called to fix that is going to make more than an attorney working on your will.
Dude, the bill was ridiculous. Yep. It was like $400 or $500. Yep. He was there for an hour.
Yep.
You know, it's unreal.
Now that will correct itself. People that go to liberal arts school will start going to trade school because they have to economically.
Yeah.
But there will be a 5 or 10 year period of time where the guy that fixes your nat gas leak will make more than the attorney you want to hire to work on your will. Guarantee it.
That's crazy. That's like
because AI can do that.
Yeah.
Can do that paperwork stuff quicker, faster, cheaper. You'll pay a tool to do that. Whereas nobody can replace the guy that comes out with his tool belt and knows what he's doing. He's spent 20 years learning it. And knows what to find and how to fix it and how to keep it safe and has spent a lifetime working on that. You know, we don't have Rosie from the Jetsons yet, and it's going to be a while before we have Rosie from the Jetsons. And so, the guy that you call to, lay a driveway in your yard is going to make more than somebody that was charging $300 an hour for legal advice.
It's hard skills, right? It's those. Right. And that's, I think that's what's, that gives me hope for my marketplace. I keep bringing it back to my, this is really cool. I've been able to kind of keep this thread through this because it's in the taxidermy space. That's a hard skill. I mean, I think there's never really going to be a replacement.
AI can't replace that. AI can make it smoother, easier, more efficient, you know, to get stuff done, but
yeah.
Can't replace it.
Okay. Wow. That's really crazy. All right. Well, I think we've come to a relatively good place to call this good. But anything else you want to add? Anything else we missed? Anything else you'd like to just kind of talk about it or anything like that?
You know, if anybody's thinking about doing something like this, just know it's a 10 year commitment. Don't think you're going to build a marketplace in a year or two or three or four. It's 10 years. It's going to be 10 years of your life. So don't do it unless you're willing to dedicate, 30% of your best years. Cause I mean, let's face it. Like this is a young man's game. Unless 30s, 40s, 50s, but 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, maybe. It's hard. It's full contact. It's 7 days a week and it's a decade. So don't do it unless you're willing to commit that chunk of your life to it.
You know, I think that's cool. Just as a side note, I think that's cool. Why, like a lot of people I've talked to are hesitant to share their ideas because they think someone's going to steal it. And that's why, like, I come on here, I literally say, like, I'm in the process of launching this thing. Like, somebody else could swoop in and take it, but I know no one's going to because exactly from what you just said, who else is willing, I don't even know if I'm fully willing to be, to be very honest. Like, I have to really look myself in the mirror and be like, is this really what I want to do? I know there's a big opportunity there, but I think that's where people go wrong, is they think like, man, this is a really big opportunity to make a lot of money, but there's timelines of like a year or
the
two.
The idea itself.
And I mean, SaaS is maybe better for that, because SaaS can be a lot largely automated. SaaS can be kind of like, you build it and then you kind of like let it run, and you can always improve it and do things. There's a lot, I think there's a lot, not that there's a lot less work in it. There's just, from my experience building those anyway, once you kind of nail it, you can scale it. You know what I mean? With a marketplace, it's there's probably lots of ebbs and flows, and
it's hard.
And there is with SaaS too, but that's crazy. So, well, awesome. Thank you very much. So yeah, if you guys want to check out the Green Pal app, actually you can go to www.yourgreenpal.com. That's correct, right?
That's right. Yep. Or just go to Green Pal in the App Store or Play Store. Give it a shot. Try it out.
Exactly.
And hit me up. Let me know what you think. I'm on Instagram, Brian M. Clayton, or just shoot me a message on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's yourgreenpal.com or on the App Store. Check it out. Brian, thank you so much for having us on. This was really awesome. Really cool. I think it'll be a really interesting listen for people when it comes to, you know, having that idea or doing this type of stuff. So thank you so much for your wisdom and your willingness to share. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
All right. Sounds good. I will talk to you guys next time. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and share this with anyone who might find value. Talk to you next time.